Father Larry Snyder is the president and CEO of Catholic Charities USA, the national office of more than 160 local Catholic charities around the country. Taking the job in 2005, he oversaw the agency's response to Hurricane Katrina just 6 months into his tenure. He's the author of the book Think and Act Anew, How Poverty in America Affects Us All and What We Can Do About It. During his time at Catholic Charities, he's pioneered a multi-year campaign to reduce poverty, which engages with both the government and the corporate sector to find research-driven, market-based solutions to poverty in America. In 2007, he was named to the Pontifical Council Cor Unum, and in 2009, President Obama appointed him to the President's Advisory Council for the Office of Faith-Based and Neighborhood Partnerships. After shepherding Catholic Charities for 10 years, Father Snyder will be stepping down in February to become Vice President for Mission and Ministry at the University of St. Thomas in Minnesota. His BA is from Illinois Benedictine College, and he has MAs in Divinity from St. Paul Seminary School of Divinity and an MA in Public Administration from Hamline University. It's a pleasure to have you today, Father Snyder, and welcome to the Boisey Center.
Okay. Thank you, Eric. Appreciate it. Let me say it's an honor to be here. I'm delighted to be asked, and especially to talk about something that's very near and dear to my heart and that I think I have considerable passion about. So Eric said that this would be not a formal presentation, but one where we can interact. So please, by all means, if anytime you want to jump in, more than happy to have you do that. What I want to focus on eventually is kind of the challenges in the safety net system that Catholic Charities is such an important part of in this country. But first of all, I thought maybe I should give a little overview about Catholic Charities in the United States. I'm not sure how much interaction or engagement you've had with Catholic Charities. But we're a diocesan-based organization, so each diocese has its own Catholic Charities. And it's the local Catholic Charities is locally governed by the bishop, by the board of trustees, and so on. And but we do have this national network. When you put us all together, last year we served over 9 million people. And that's across the spectrum of human services. And it's almost like saying, to put it in perspective, that that's like one out of four people living in poverty are served by Catholic Charities in this country. We have a combined budget of about $4.3 billion, about 70,000 staff members, and over 300,000 volunteers. So we're a fairly large network that covers the whole United States as well as our territories. And like I say, we do provide the whole spectrum of human services. And if you've seen one Catholic Charities agency, you've seen one Catholic Charities agency, because we're all different, depending on what the local needs are and how those needs, the response has developed in time. So there is not one program that we all do. It depends on the local communities. An interesting thing is we trace our beginnings back to 1727, when 12 Ursuline sisters came from Paris to minister to the needs of the immigrants in New Orleans at the time. And, of course, that was New France at the time as well. And that's about 50 years before Paul Revere took his ride or anything else happened. And so we've been around a long time. Another interesting thing about that is the fact that when you look at the Catholic Church in the United States, for the majority of our history, we have been an immigrant church. Well into the 20th century, over half of the Catholics in this country were not born here. So much of the ministry that evolved was actually ministry to help the immigrants who came here, seeking opportunity, not always finding it, but in many instances finding prejudice against Catholics as well. So that's kind of what our roots are. I would say about 60% of the funding that we receive is government funding. And there's a lot of people who question that. And I think for me, it's a matter of the intersection of missions, the mission of the government or the role of the government, which a lot of people in Washington right now would say, well, the role, of course, is national security and civil order. And that's certainly a piece of it. But in our religious tradition, we'd say that the role of government is much broader. It is to ensure the common good, and all that means, especially those for assuring those who are most marginalized in society. And you look at the mission of the church, and you see that there obviously is an intersection. What the government can do is bring resources that we couldn't possibly begin to have. And the issues that we deal with, in fact, are so great that we need that to really have any kind of a response to those things. Interestingly enough, people sometimes think that this is a partnership that has just happened over the last couple of decades. In fact, if you look at the first federal grant that was given to a nonprofit organization, it actually happened in the year 1871. And before that, there were a lot of partnerships, but they were on the local level. But in 1871, the first federal grant, and it was given to, does anybody know? The Little Sisters of the Poor, to care for elderly citizens in Washington, D.C., who were living in poverty. So that began a partnership that has, I think, grown to the place where we are today. Again, I would just remind people, sometimes say, but then the government's telling you what to do. And actually, no. I mean, you enter into a contract, right? Two parties, they each have to agree to it. So one party cannot tell the other party, you have to do this, you have to do that. You find the mutually agreeable space, and that's what you do. So all of that, I think, is to say that as we work in the public square for the common good, especially for those living in poverty and those who are marginalized, we're a pretty significant part of the safety net in this country. And our goal is to reduce poverty. We'd love to have the goal to end poverty, but we're not that far along yet. We need to reduce poverty. With that, I kind of want to transition into to some my comments about how do we propose to do that. And 2010 was our centennial year as a national organization. So we were founded in 1910. And the interesting thing in 1910 was our charter called us to be the attorney for the poor. Okay, so that it's not enough just to provide services. You have to also provide advocacy, because you can't just help people and leave them where they're at. You have to actually advocate on their behalf. And that's something that I think we've taken very seriously. And historically, at various times, you've seen that Catholic Charities has actually been a catalyst for this. If you want one example, I would say it would be the Social Security Act. One of my predecessors, Monsignor O'Grady, was actually the pioneer for the Social Security Act. And much like the health care reform that we've seen, it didn't get passed in the first time. It took about four times for Roosevelt to bring this up. And at one point, he had Monsignor O'Grady in the Oval Office, and he said, "I've done all I can politically. You have to go up on Capitol Hill now and do this." And so he's mentioned in the congressional record as being one of the architects and being one of the people who've done this. So I say that because I think we can feel very, very proud of the fact that the Social Security Act, which has been the most successful anti-poverty legislation that this country's ever enacted, was in large part due to the work of our predecessors in the faith. So in 2010, we had 10 listening sessions all across the country, and not just Catholic Charities people, but anybody who was involved or had a stake in the issues surrounding poverty, and just said, you know, first of all, tell us what's working, but tell us what's not working, and then let's see if we can come up with some big ideas. And we came up with basically three strategies that we think are going to be critical to really reducing poverty in this country. And the first is that it needs to be systems changing. As important as the safety net is in this country, and it is critical to millions of people's lives, but basically what we do is we keep people from falling any further down than they are. We don't help people get out. The programs are not designed to get people out of poverty. They're designed to help them survive, not to thrive. And so that, we said one thing, we have to change the system. A big piece of that is, in fact, that the poverty programs that were designed are designed as if there's one size fits all. And poverty is not monolithic. It has many different forms. And three, real quickly, are that there are those who are in poverty because of situational things. Something happens, knocks folks off their feet, but they've got the skills, they can get a job again, they just need some help for time to bridge that, to get in. So those are the easiest folks, actually, to work with. Then you have the generational poverty folks, who for two, three, or more generations, everyone in their family has lived in poverty. It's a much different kind of strategy that you need to help them get out of poverty than the others. And then you've got the folks who have some kind of a hindrance that's always going to be there for them. And these could be folks with addictions that don't seem to be curable, folks with other maladies, and they're always going to need some kind of help. Because you get three different groups of people, and yet the government says, okay, one size fits all, and it doesn't. And so what we think you need is the ability to have an individual approach. So right now, if somebody comes in and said, you know, I need gas money to get to work. I've got a job, but I don't have gas money because for whatever reason. And we say, well, I can't give you that, but I can give you groceries, you know. Okay, but so there's not the ability to tailor the response to the needs of the person. So that's the first thing we're saying is let's develop individual opportunity plans for people. So when they come in, we're really addressing their needs, which, again, the principle of subsidiarity and respect for the individual all gets played into there so that we're not discounting the value of their own situation. So that's the first thing. The second is that we need to engage corporate America or the markets in a different way. And I would say anybody who works in a nonprofit probably has been the recipient of corporate philanthropy because corporate America is very philanthropic and we all depend upon it. And so that's good. But I think we can engage them in a way that might be more productive. All of this is to say, too, to be aware that there is part of corporate America that profits from people being in poverty. And we have to call that for what it is, too. We sometimes call them the poverty pimps. So it's the people with substandard housing. It's the people who do payday loan folks. And just a thought there, too. Do you know there are more payday loan offices in the United States than there are McDonald's? So somebody's making money, and that would not be true, and making substantial amounts of money at the expense of the poor. And so those folks need to be addressed. But when you look at the rest of corporate America, I mean, one of the huge things that they have is the ability to be very creative with the research and development that they do that nonprofits cannot. We cannot put money into research and development because if you fail, what happens? All your funding is then yanked because, look, you have failed. Now, in a corporation, that's considered, well, that's part of the game as far as, you know, if you're going to have a product, you will have several that don't fail, that don't succeed. So, anyway, we think if we could tap into that because a lot of the things that really contribute to poverty are the lack of the correct products that people need. So, you know, people are amazed that you get folks who are on food stamps and they're overweight. And yet, why is that? Because they buy the cheapest food to make it go the farthest, and the cheapest food, it lacks nutrition for the most part, and, you know, and it carbs you out and all that. So, we think we can work with corporate America to really design better products, especially food products. But as well as all that, there's the possibility of new corporate entities. And here you have the B corporations or benefit corporations. They are for-profit corporations, but they are committed to giving all profit back to a nonprofit or community need. And some states have them set up, some don't. I'm not sure about Massachusetts. But the best example I could give you is Paul Newman. Salad dressing, popcorn, all that. He's not actually a B corporation. That entity isn't, because I don't think they have them where they're incorporated. But they operate as a B corporation, so you can see that. Those are the kinds of things that I think are really good. Another example I give you is I used to be head of Catholic Charities in St. Paul, Minneapolis. We've got a phenomenal woman who does is head of our housing there. And her sister studied in Europe to be a master brewer. Okay, so her sister looks at all the housing work that's being done at Catholic Church. She says, I'm going to develop a line of beer to be marketed in the Twin Cities, and all of the profits will go to housing needs. And so those are the kinds of things I think that are creative. It's engaging corporate America in a different way. And It's allowing corporate America to be a part of the response, as well as to be a part of the conscience, if you will. So that's the second piece, is market engaging. The third is results-driven. And this points the finger more back to us as nonprofits, because most of us were trained as social workers and not as statisticians or economists. So we don't tend to keep track of the elements of our programs to see what is succeeding and what's not. In a more generic way is to say, what we need to do is quit focusing on outputs and focus on outcomes. An example is, if I'm running a shelter, I can tell you the outputs. I can tell you how many people were sheltered there last year. I can tell you month by month. And this is a good thing, right? This is something we should be proud of. But typically what I can't tell you is how many of them got out of poverty, because that's not my goal. My goal is to shelter them. And so I designed my program to shelter people. And I'm saying, if we change our goal to actually say, how many people are we going to get out of poverty, we're going to design our programs differently. And one of the things that we have done at Catholic Charities USA is that we've partnered with the Department of Economics at Notre Dame University, University of Notre Dame, and have established the Laboratory for Economic Opportunities. And basically the economists, so what we've got here is we've got the practitioners and the academics coming together. And I said to Eric earlier, so we've got pracademics, you know? and I think we're going to learn a lot more when we've got the two groups talking to each other. But basically, they're going in to our programs, and they look at how many moving parts there are, and then they're assessing, okay, which of these parts are actually having an effect, and which are not. And that's, you don't learn to do that in social work school, and it is the role of an economist. And so, to me, this is really one of the game-changing pieces for us as social service providers, that we are really looking at it in this way, to focus on results instead of just continuing to do good works. We have to be able to justify the investment that's there. Those are the three things that we have. I think just a couple other comments here is that we tend always to work in a bipartisan way. And both parties bring something to the table, to the discussion. And one thing I would say is Representative Paul Ryan is getting a lot of press. I mean, his budget got a lot of press a year or so ago, which was not too exciting for those of us in the social service system. But since then, he has been spending a lot of time studying poverty programs. And we've actually spent a lot of time talking to him. And one of the things that he had in his first draft was just throw out case management. Now, if you know human service agencies, most of what we do is case management. Most of it is one human being sitting down with another human being assessing what the situation is, making a plan, and then helping the person keep to the plan. It's critical to everything that we do. So we said, we need you to come to Wisconsin with us. And he gave us 2 days in Wisconsin. We took him to centers and let him watch what happened, talk to the people, talk to the social workers. And at the end of the day, he says, okay, you win. He says, you can't do this without case management. And so if you look at his plan that he put out about 6 weeks ago, case management is a key part of what he's got in there. And I think it is because he did listen to us. Now, I'm not endorsing everything else that was in his plan, but I think this is how we move things forward in a bipartisan way, and that was a good thing. What we're trying to do is to look at pilot projects now across the country in various agencies that are going to kind of prove our assumptions, if you will. So that's we have a lot of effort that's being focused on that, as well as we pulled together a coalition to we're calling to end poverty, and it's our partners who are doing the same thing. So it includes United Way, but like Alliance for Children and Families, Salvation Army, St. Vincent de Paul Society. I'm not going to be able to rattle them all off, but folks who are we're all working, but we've been working separately, going down our own paths. And now we're coming together 3 or 4 times a year, sharing information. The amazing thing was is that the program design that we were coming up with, Salvation Army had almost exactly the same thing, and we didn't even know it. So we think this is great that we're working together, because Catholic Charities isn't going to do this. Salvation Army isn't going to do it by themselves. But together, I think we could have an impact.
Excellent.
So that's kind of the challenge. It's kind of strategically where we're at right now in time. And if you find that interesting, we can continue talking about it. If you want to take the conversation a whole different direction, we can do that too.
Thanks so much.